You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, Alicia here with the Lorehounds, your guides to interdimensional imps and the other shenanigans of Peacemaker Season 2, Episode 4, Need I Say Door.
This is Comics Versus Talks the DC Universe, and I'm Jean, already lining up some rocks for Red St. Wild to start kicking.
And I'm Aaron, representing Radioactive Ramblings, here to cheer Economos on as he finally claps back.
Check out Mind Sean's Season 1 breakdown for a spoiler-free discussion of the show overall and background on the production. These episodes, these weekly episodes, however, we do get right into the spoilers, which includes any DC movies, TV, comics, whatever that we feel like bringing up. So today we're going to be jumping right into Episode 4 of Season 2. We're halfway through the season now, but this didn't feel like a mid-season finale. It felt like maybe episode 5 is going to be more of that big moment of change. And this was like kind of teeing it up. What do you guys think?
I agree. I think this was like a setup episode for the rest of the season. So I was expecting a lot more action, like a lot more things to happen on screen. But the things that did happen seemed like it was a setup for the end, for the rest of the season.
Yeah,
we know that the next episode, episode 5, is the last one that was given to critics in advance. And episodes 6 through 8 have been kept under strict lock and key. And it's said that they almost feel like a completely different series. Something wild's going to happen, something very spoilery. So, yeah, I feel like next week is going to be ending this setup story arc so that whatever that is can play out. This is called Need I Say Door, which title self-explanatory. And the tagline is Argus lays siege to Peacemaker's home in search of his quantum unfolding chamber while Harcourt receives a tempting offer from Flag. So, Aaron, what did you think about this episode overall?
I loved this episode. It might be the strongest one in the season in terms of the character development. I think that I'm finally certain. I don't think Harcourt has any ill will towards Chris over Rick Flagg's death. Maybe I'm wrong on that one, but I do think that she's more in it to get her job back, and that's the more important aspect of turning on Chris, but we'll get into that later. And the other big moment, as I alluded to earlier, it was Economos finally standing up for himself. This guy, I would hate to meet him in real life. He just seems like a really difficult guy to get along with, which he admits to himself, but it was great seeing him snap back at all the ginger cool comments that he's been getting.
I mean, and the funny thing is, like, that is the best, probably the best nickname, like the kindest nickname that we've seen anyone get on this show.
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
The gentlest. And Sean, right before we started recording, you said, I forget how you worded it, but you called this kind of an interesting episode.
I thought it was interesting because, again, like I said, I thought there was going to be a lot more action, but what they did was really set up what I think is going to be for the rest of the season. So a lot of, you know, moving parts to the story. And that's not what I was expecting at all. I was expecting some, you know, more eagerly, you know, brutalizes folks. And we didn't get that. We didn't get like full on confrontations, which I thought we were going to get. But again, it's just the way that they played Chris and, you know, all his allies and enemies, and just put, it's like moving pieces on the chessboard to set up what's the final, you know, push. And I thought that was, they did a great job of doing that for me.
Yeah. Okay. What else did you think about this episode?
I thought that, I think Adebayo, she is protesting too much about the alternate universe.
You think that she's tempted too? You
mean? I do. Mm. Because her life right now is not as she would want it to be. It's, you know, very much a mess in a different way from Chris. And I think they're both looking for, you know, some sort of happiness in the now. Like, she's had to deal, come to terms with who her mother is, the loss of her relationship. You know, so she's going through, we don't think of her as going through things because we're so focused on Chris and Hardcore because they're just so obvious, right? But Adebayo's going through a lot as well. And I think in that conversation she's having with Chris, talking about the alternate universe, I just felt like there was something eating at her, like, oh, what if it is, could it be a little bit better than what I have right now? So I'll be interested to see if they play up on that at all.
She does seem to be in full denial about Kia.
Yeah, and that's too much.
Yeah. Like, Kia's like, leave me alone, woman. Yeah. And she's like, look, my new ad.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just want to see if that leads anywhere, because I really think she's thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, she does say something rather wise at one point when she's talking to Chris. She says,
Chris, no matter how green the grass is over there, our biggest problems in life are the ones that we carry within ourselves. Everything else evens out.
That resonated with me. I wonder if you're right, if she is trying, if she is in denial about, you know, she knows that that's the right thing to say, but if she,
like, she's deep emotionally, down, you know, grown enough to say that, right? But at her present state right now, as she's looking around and she's hearing, like, this mercenary magazine is a, it's not real, right? So her plans are not working presently. I just feel like there was just something in her eye, just something in the way it was acted, that it was just like, it's a little bit, it seems like it's a little bit tempting.
Yeah. It's hard to take your own advice sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. So I think probably, Aaron, you also missed Vigilante this episode, but what did you think of Red St. Wild?
I don't like this guy whatsoever. He's he's on my nerves. The whole cultural appropriation thing is, it was a bit much before they gave him actual powers. And now that he has actual powers related to all of that, I don't know quite what to think about the message that they're putting forward with him. I don't know what the show is trying to say about this guy.
Yeah. I know, Sean, you're not a fan. You're definitely.
Oh, no, I hate him.
I'm going to do a partial defense of Red St. Wild. He is, you know, he says himself basically that he does not claim to be Native American. He says that he is basically has white guilt about genocide against Native Americans. That's what comes up later. But he does know things. You know, the tribes he mentioned are real tribes. Like, the Yakima are based in Washington State, which is where Peacemaker is set. So this makes sense. The Meskwaki, they are from further east, but actually they were originally from the Eastern Woodlands, and they're Algonquin, which makes them distantly related to my own tribe from my father's side of the family, the Potawatomi. And the Eagle, in the Potawatomi tribe plays a very important role. There's an eagle sanctuary on the reservation in Oklahoma. I did bring show and tell today, even though people can't see it. This is the only eagle feather I've earned for my naming ceremony. It is much bigger than anything. Yeah, I know you can't see it if you're listening, but it's white at the base, going quickly into dark gray, and it's about the length of my forearm. I'm a fairly small woman. I'm 5'2", 157 centimeters. But it's a pretty chunky feather.
It is.
And yeah, it's often used in Potawatomi. It's used, so this one I got for my naming ceremony. It's used in ritual as a conduit to the heavens, basically, because the eagles are considered messengers to the creator. Mm-hmm. And this is one reason why they're so sacred. And so Potawatomi, and so I have to assume the Meskwaki probably have some similarities. I don't really know much about them, but the Potawatomi version is often ceremonies include tobacco smoke or sage smoke. Like I have some sage here that I'm going to cleanse the feather with before I put it back after this. You use it to basically waft it toward the heavens, and it's called smudging the smoke, basically. And yeah, this is a matter of communicating. And the thing is, what we saw Red Saint Wild do was in many ways accurate to general, you know, the fire dance ritual, things like that. And then we see him actually unlock some powers. So my partial defense of him is, yes, he's culturally appropriating, but who taught him this? We don't know his full story yet. So I'm reserving my judgment a little bit. Also, just because I am someone who is constantly being told by the tribe itself, like, don't let people tell you that you are not Potawatomi just because of the way you look. Now, that's not the case for Red Saint Wild, but I definitely have a sensitivity about that. Like, let's not judge people based on them not looking the way you expect them to. Yeah. So this is why. But, okay. The eagle's now sacred, obviously. It's illegal to hunt them. It's illegal to have the feather that I have unless you have a dispensation from your tribe. So nobody hunts them anymore. Obviously, probably, yeah, for sure, some tribes hunted them in the past. But some elements, like the blood ritual, feels a bit BS to me. But what can I say about this alternate universe or things that I don't know? I cringed a bit when I saw him place the eagle feather on the ground, things like that. But I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Thoughts?
I mean, you're way kinder than I am. That's for sure. You've always been way kinder than me. So, it's not that I don't believe that it's based in some realism. Like they're just making it up, you know, out of cloth, like taking people's cultures and doing what they will with it. I don't think that's what's going on. I just think that the character itself is unnecessary. And if you wanted to do that, why do that through a white presenting person?
Yeah, I'm not saying the questions don't exist. I'm just saying I'm not going to consider them answered until the end of the season.
And even if, for me, even if he was, you know, it's 2025, right? Mm-hmm. There's a dearth of minority characters on television, on screen, period. If you wanted to introduce that element, why not just use someone who can act the part the way that you want it to be acted? I'm not saying that he's the actor. I forget his name.
Michael Roker.
Yeah, Michael Roker. He's great. I love Michael Roker. Mm-hmm. Right? I just think if you're going to introduce that sort of character, why not introduce someone who is actually of that cloth to the screen? That's my thought.
So what I mean by the questions are not answered, I mean, and we'll see whether or not this plays into it at all, but just the fact that we think that this alternate universe is a racist universe, I do wonder if that will play into what we learn about the identity of this character at all.
Why do you say that?
The fact that he is a white man who does not identify as Native American yet is using Native American ritual, this seems to be, I mean, obviously there he has directly brought up the racial genocide aspect of it, which would be something very prevalent in this other universe, if it is the universe that we think that it is.
But he's in our universe, in Chris's main universe.
And so I am wondering when, I'm assuming that we'll meet alternate versions of a lot of these characters in the other universe.
Oh, okay.
And I'm wondering if the pieces of the puzzle fit together in a way that answers some of these questions.
I didn't think about that. That's interesting.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see whether it plays out like that. But I'm reserving judgment on it until the end of the season. Because it's also, you know, this is a James Gunn show. We hear a lot of like casual racism and homophobia and misogyny exchanged on the regular basis. And we laugh at it because it's sort of like not promoting it, but meant to be laughed at.
Right.
So I don't know, like the fact that there are, you know, people expect, even though he might have some fetishistic interest in Native American culture, he is, on the other hand, quite racist when it comes to Asian, various Asian countries.
Yeah. Right, right.
So I don't know. We see a lot of characters who are awful in different specific ways rather than just being blanket evil.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying. And let me just say this before you chime in, Aaron. I'm not saying that the character itself is an evil person or anything of that nature.
I mean, he's an ego killer. I'm not loving him.
Right. But my complaint is specifically because this show plays on those tropes, misogyny, you know, racism, the casual racism that people have, the extreme misogyny that people have by the people who actually perpetrate those things, right? So you're not, it's not as if you're punching up, you're not punching down in that comedy. I feel this character is punching down. That's how I view it. I would take it differently if it was someone who was indigenous.
I think if they, just the fact that they have paid attention to a certain level of accuracy when it comes to the performance of the rituals and the way we had this supernatural ending that suggests that there's more to the story has made me say, okay, I'll wait. But sorry, Aaron, I interrupted you.
I was just going to say that I think James Gunn, for the most part, handles issues of race, gender, sexual orientation very carefully and is typically good about bringing in people who actually belong to these groups for consultation and to make sure that he has his facts right. There are some things that it kind of worries me. Is he doing the right thing here? Because I'm not a particular fan of the way that he has represented the LGBTQ plus community in this show. I think that for the most part, Peacemaker's bisexuality has been mostly just a sex thing, which is kind of a harmful stereotype about queer people. So it makes me wonder if James Gunn is going to handle this sensitively or if he is jumping in without doing his research first.
Okay, that's fair.
It's fair.
That's fair. Okay, well,
so the consensus is Red Saint Walker kick rocks.
I mean, yeah, regardless, he's still trying to kill Eagly. Give the man some rocks to kick.
Yeah, got a whole quarry for Red Saint Walker.
But it was very interesting to see at the end that he legitimately unlocked some sort of supernatural astral projection powers. And like, okay, what's that about?
What's going on here? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So it bears watching, but it does bear watching. And I agree with you. Let's let it play out and see where it goes. But up until now, kick rocks, Red. Kick rocks.
Yeah, I mean, kick rocks regardless.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break here. When we get back, we will get into the episode itself.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All right, so let's get into the episode itself. Just to run down real quick, written by James Gunn. All the episodes written by James Gunn. This one was directed by Peter Solitz, who's best known as the director of the 2008 film Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Have either of you watched that?
No.
I've never even heard of it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's it's kind of like an indie cult classic, I suppose. That's kind of marries like the Before Sunrise concept of, or like the more recent Rye Lane of people just wandering through a city mixed with music. So pleasant, chill, mostly film, which
mostly.
And then this is, well, you know, it's a film, there's drama. And this one was 1 minute longer than last time, in 39 minutes. Next week is the shortest yet at 37. I'm like, why can't we have 5 extra minutes?
I know, right?
We better be getting feature length for the last few weeks. You know what surprises me about the IMDb scores for these? So this one, it's at an 8.3 right now, just a little less than last time. But the lowest score so far is episode 2. But I feel like episode 2, which is where we first really got to know Tim Meadows, is the one that people talk about the most.
I do. That is interesting.
Yeah.
I guess that recency bias always kind of creeps into a show like this.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Maybe not everyone liked Fleury the same way.
Maybe. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Very misogynistic.
He is. Yes. He's a terrible person.
Yeah. I've seen all over social media and different internet spaces people loving Fleury's character and thinking he fits right into the cast, though.
He does, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he is terrible.
He is terrible. For sure. It's going to be interesting to see how these all gel together. Jean, do you want to set us up?
Sure. So, in a cold open flashback to 35 years ago, child Chris from the DCU universe, his brother Keith, and their father Augie discovers an interdimensional imp while hunting. Augie kills the creature, taking his strange door to alternate realities for himself.
That was an imp. Important discovery.
Oh gosh. Oh my gosh.
Can I be honest, when it started and I heard like just that kind of animal screaming off camera, I was afraid this was going to be the Eagly origin story, which I said I was worried would be linked to his death.
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, it was an imp. But wow, full gore on that imp.
Gosh.
Entrails. Genitals, yeah, brain just, blown.
This is terrible. Like, what a horrible person Augie is. Like, just a terrible human being. It's a terrible man, terrible father. It's a horrible all around. Like,
Yeah. We always had the idea he loved Keith more than Chris, but we see him back end Keith here. And it made me wonder if Keith had survived, would he just grow up to hate them both? And what's the difference between this dimension and the other? Is it because in this dimension, Keith said, fuck white power last season. And maybe in the other dimension, the brothers didn't fight back against the racism. Right. Mm-hmm.
I think another really important aspect of that is it was never about putting Keith on a pedestal. or the fact that he loved his son and he got stuck with the son he didn't want. It was about using his brother's death as a tool to put Chris down. He was using it because he was a bad father, not because he really loved Keith.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
You're right.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy is like, like, you can see, you know, and I'm watching it and I'm just like, wow, just imagining to have that in your life all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, every waking hour, that's what you're faced with. I mean, gosh, there's no way you come, the chances that you become a well-rounded person with that in your life every day are so small. So small.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder if, even if the other is the uber racist dimension, how much, I don't know, it doesn't seem like they are healthier, the Keith and Chris of that dimension, but it seems like they did grow up with their father loving them. And even if he indoctrinated them in racist ways, the fact that he didn't beat them over the head while doing it must have made a difference.
But we don't know that.
We don't know that, but he... I mean, you think he would have softened in adulthood with the others, or did he, is he just kinder to them because he's rich?
It could be. I'm not putting anything past the ultimate dimension, you know, family.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They could have been just as brutally, you know, malicious as this regular dimension family was. Except that they won. They won the lottery in that dimension. You know what I mean? And that that can change dynamics immensely. So I'm just, you know, watching that scene in the woods with them was just so heartbreaking. It really was. It's just like, how do you, as a child, as a teenager, as a young man, how do you survive, you know, that?
Mm-hmm.
How do you become like, I can't even imagine, you know, being put in that situation and then being asked to be a good person. How?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like how does Chris survive that and not become who he is right now, who we see on screen?
Right.
There's no way.
Or who he was last season, even.
Right. Now. Right. Who he's trying not to be this season.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way.
Yeah. So we have to talk about these imps. We did hear them previously mentioned in the other dimension. Apparently, there are a few doors down from that door to Earth 2. And Chris used to chase them in their world as a child. We heard this story told a few episodes ago. So I'm assuming that means Earth 2 found the QUC in the similar way or even the same way. I wonder, like, when did these fork, these worlds? But my question is, we know the imps are in the comics, they're like fifth dimensional beings that can kind of manipulate time, space, et cetera. So it seems like they invented the technology, but Jean, what is a mother box in DC Comics? Oh. And could this be related to that?
I don't think they're related.
Okay.
But I do think James Gunn is trying to get people to imagine these things are possible, to see that these things are possible. So when, you know, someone just shows up with a ping, you're not taken aback. Oh, how did that happen? You know what I mean? Like the audience is not primed to think that you can step through a gate, a doorway, and instantly be transported somewhere else. A mother box in the comics, they're used by the, and this got me down a rabbit hole, like thinking about this. So, but let me geek out for a moment.
Uh-huh,
a mother box is like a sentient machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
It houses the power of the source, which is the basically the creator of the DC universe. Right. So it houses that power. They're living machines. They can do virtually anything, right? With the person who they bond with So when I first saw Mother Box, looking back at it now, I'm like, this is the first like iPhone that I ever saw in my life. that's what it really is, right? It's like these a computer that you hold, that can be held in your hand. And this was like invented in the 70s. This was drawn by Kirby. So mostly we see them with the new gods. When I talk about the new gods, I'm talking about Darkseid, Orion, Highfather, those sorts of cosmic beings who are on a level above everyone else. Apocalypse and New Genesis. Those are the two competing planets. You mostly see Darkseid vis-a-vis Superman as an antagonist. So that got me thinking. The James Gunn has said this is gods and monsters. Right? So if he's priming folks to think about this instant transportation to different dimensions and different universes, I've been thinking gods and monsters meant heroes and villains. What if it doesn't mean heroes and villains? So
what do you mean?
Because what if he's starting to tell the story of the new gods, which is integral to a Superman story? So we already know Superman is the linchpin of the DCEU per Gunn. So I'm thinking now, I'm wondering if gods and monsters is the entryway into the story of the new gods, which features all sorts of fantastical elements to it. Think Thanos on a million scale. Think Endgame beyond, right? So that's where my head canon immediately went to when you asked the question about the mother boxes. I was like, wait a minute, mother box. I don't think the quantum unfolding chamber is a mother box, but I do think he's priming people to start wondering about these threads that he's laying down, these breadcrumbs.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the technology seems to be similar. Aaron, you observed this too. You watched Superman recently, that the technology is similar to what we saw Lex Luthor doing.
Yeah, I wonder if he has any connection to that alternate dimension imp race, if he borrowed some technology. But it seems like Lex Luthor is just an intelligent guy who's able to figure these mysteries out on his own, whereas we finally got confirmation that Augie is indeed not a brainy racist, just a racist.
Were you relieved?
I was very relieved.
Yeah. That's why I say let's hear him out for a minute. Although it sounded like on the official podcast, it sounded like he was saying it was kind of HBO's idea. Like, let's not make the redneck uber racist a brilliant inventor, which I suppose would have been an interesting characterization. But it's also, yeah, I like the comeback this episode where Chris is like, he dropped out of school in the 10th grade or flunked out in the 10th grade or whatever.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's interesting that Chris was apparently the one who figured out how to transfer the location of the door in the first place.
Yeah.
So Chris might be a little smarter than we give him credit for. And he remembers it now all these years later.
Yes.
Of course, Augie put his sons at risk to do it.
It was a complicated looking little piece of technology when he was fiddling around with that. I was impressed by the visuals that they were able to pull out for this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that you know, that device looks a lot like Peacemaker's helmets.
Helmets, yeah.
So, yeah, Adebayo asks later, like, well, who made the helmets? And it seems like Chris has something like it's complicated. And James Gunn said on the DC podcast that he does have the answer to that, but it sounds like we won't find out the answer this season. But I'm intrigued.
Very, very.
Aaron, do you want to set up the big action set piece of this episode?
Absolutely. Raid and retreat. Chris wakes up hungover in his home dimension and finally notices the wreckage of Eagly's fight with the Argus agents, another team of which is on their way to break down Chris's door, kill Eagly, and take possession of the QUC. Economos, increasingly fed up with being asked to turn on his friends, texts Chris to warn him, and Chris retrieves the device that controls the QUC, and he and Eagly slip out the back door just before the agents arrive. Judo Master on the Argus team catches up with Peacemaker in the woods. They fight until Chris knocks him out and runs, texting Leota to pick him up and Eagly. Red St. Wild, meanwhile, has Eagly in his sights until Economos pushes him into a rock, knocking him out as well. When Red St. Wild wakes up with a wound in the middle of his forehead, he says his third eye has been opened. Economos is then asked to hack the keypad guarding the door to the QUC, and he stalls to give Chris some time to move the entrance to his grandfather's old cabin in the woods. He asks Vigilante to buy a door to hang so that they can close the new entrance to the QUC.
Yeah, so, I mean, I kind of was on Economos' side, even when he spat on Flurry. But I know it was very disrespectful, but Flurry is constantly disrespectful to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, though, you know, we got words and we got actions. I'm just saying, you know, Flurry, I thought was about that action. You know, you can't take that. You can't take that. No.
Sasha held him back. Sasha held him back.
No. You can't take that. You know what I'm saying? That was egregious. Like, yo. Like, Flurry, you just going to stand there, bro? Come on, man.
He went at him. Sasha held him back.
Nah, you got to hold me back a little bit harder. There's no way. There's no way. I'm not letting that slide. I'm surprised Flurry let that slide. And I'll be surprised if we don't get some sort of vengeance for that. If he doesn't try to do something because of that.
You're probably right.
The whole crew, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
but it was also Economos like was stirring some shit, and I think that's actually pretty useful to Chris and, you know, the crew trying to escape to
definitely
sow chaos from within. I had a thought about Sasha was okay, so there's that whole thing where Economos told her, he said that Flurry winked at me like he had you wrapped around his little finger. And then later on, Sasha winks at Flurry like we're all on the same side, right? And I had a thought to myself as I watched it the first time, like, oh, that was very robotic looking, like, because she's not a natural at, you know, being cool or whatever. But then I also thought the cyborg thing, what if she was robotic? Super tinfoil hat time.
Oh, man.
Interesting.
Yeah, that would be dope. I won't lie, but I don't think she's a cyborg yet. I don't think so. Not yet.
What do you think, Aaron, about Sasha and about Economos pushing back?
Well, to me, I feel like the worst of the two offenses between Economos telling on Flurry for the winking and the spitting in the face, I might be more mad that he went and ran to the boss to tell them what I was up to.
That's true.
But either way, just the amount of disrespect against Flurry, while a little bit justified, it was pretty entertaining, and it'll be interesting to see them play with that Sasha Bordeaux cyborg idea. I hope that they eventually play that out on screen. I would like to see her become a cyborg. That would be pretty
interesting. Dope. Yeah,
that would be cool. Yeah, Economos was, he's really like, he's just totally fed up. First of all, he should have texted Chris sooner, but anyway, he did. He was obviously texting without looking. It's full of typos, but it's interesting. Chris has him in his phone, not as Dyebeard, but as a Kana goat. So that's, we can see the arc of the character relationships this season for sure. I cannot believe that they let Economos keep his phone for as long as they did.
That was wild.
I mean, like, this man is clearly not on your side. Like, I don't even know why he's still on this mission.
But I think they underestimate him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they underestimate him. I think that's his superpower. You know what I mean? Almost. Like, people overlook him, you know? Oh, that's the geeky dude. That's the nerdy dude. That's the dude that doesn't have, you know, he's not athletic. He's you know, and you don't think that he's going to do things to sabotage what you have going on. Like, he wants to keep his job. He's just a pencil pusher. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's smart, but I think that's what it is. So he's using that to his advantage, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And Judo Master, though, he definitely has his number. Well, first of all, Judo Master is holding grudges left and right. He says to Chris, "You screwed the world once. I won't let you do it again." And he says to Economos,
"What are you looking at?
Remember that time you smashed my car with a truck? Snuck up behind me and hit me in the head with a tire iron?"
"Yeah, why?"
"Curious."
"Well, it was a great fucking moment."
"Hot take."
Aaron, how'd you feel about Judo Master's performance this week?
I like him a lot. He's constantly got some kind of quip that he wants to throw out. He's completely over the top in the best way possible. He's a very camp character, and mm-hmm. I love him for that.
Why do we like these terrible people? Right?
Also, the insult game on this show is top notch. Economos calls Judo Master Kung Fu Bulbasaur, and every time I hear it, makes me laugh. Which Bulbasaur is a green Pokemon. He doesn't particularly well, I guess, you know, because kind of sort of
green outfit. Yeah.
Just picture him like flying at someone, you know, curled up in a ball.
The way he was moving in this episode was crazy. When he starts doing backflips chasing after Chris, I lost it. I was dying.
That was nuts. That was nuts.
Yeah, because that is the thing. It's like it can be hard to sell that when there's a big size disparity like between him and Chris. And obviously, ultimately, Chris's size wins because he comes down on him hard from a distance. Right. But you buy the entire time that it, like, no, this guy can kick that bigger guy's ass.
Yeah, you can't outfight him. Mm-hmm. You know, Judo Master, you can't outfight him. You're not going to, you know, go one-on-one with him with your hands. Mm-hmm. He's going to kick your ass every time. You got to do something else. You got to use your advantages, and this is Chris using his.
Yeah.
You know, thinking on the fly, man.
He got a bit lucky, but a bit thinking on the fly. I find it hilarious and karmic somehow that Economos is teamed up with Kung Fu Bulbasaur and Captain Cultural Appropriation. Yeah. What did you guys think about the eating the eagle shit moment, which is also the credit scene this week?
The credit scene was hilarious.
It made me gag.
That was funny.
You've never tasted caviar. Bird eats better than I do.
That was hilarious. That was hilarious. But the in story scene a little bit much, man. I'm like, come on, dude. Like,
come on. What are we doing here? I get.
Yeah. I'm like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? This is a bit much. This is a bit much. Red saying, "Wow, go to the quarry already." Too much.
I don't know what it says about me as a viewer that the whole alien death scene didn't really get me, but I gagged at the eagle.
Yes, exactly.
Also, I feel like Steve Agee's reactions in all of this are really selling it. Like, his gag response made me gag, but also this whole exchange they had about the primal eagle after he knocks him out.
"Oh, thank God. Oh, man, that was insane. It's the craziest thing oh, my God. Oh.
What the hell happened?
I came up behind you when you were about to shoot eagle. That eagle.
Yeah, I remember getting a beat on it, but I can't quite remember anything after.
And then another eagle.
Another eagle?
Yeah, a second eagle. Flew in the fast and boom, just knocked you over and you slammed into that rock.
No, that don't make no sense, son. No? I mean, eagles are solitary creatures.
Yes, that's what's so weird, right?
This could only mean one thing. The eagle I was about to shoot was a primal eagle foretold in Yakima and Misquakimis.
What?
The eagle that rules over all the eagles. Everything in my life has led me to this moment, son. To kill the primal eagle. The soul of our country shall be purged of all of our transgressions against all the native and indigenous peoples of this land."
That's the one thing it could mean? Because I feel like it could mean a lot of different things.
I felt it could mean a lot of different things, too. Like, you're killing the primal eagle? Why are you going to kill the primal eagle? And why would killing the primal eagle cleanse the nation of all the sins that it perpetrated on the Native Americans? I'm confused.
Especially because it's a sacred animal. It's a sacred animal. Yeah.
I'm confused. I was as confused as Economos. What is this guy talking about here?
I do wonder if this is foreshadowing another eagle showing up, or like maybe there is an eagly in the other universe. We haven't seen some out. What if someone else, what if Redtain Wild in the other universe is has like eagly as his companion?
I mean, there's a lot of what ifs. You got a lot of Redtain Wild what ifs.
Oh, you know, I like the tinfoil hat theory, I'm just thinking, I don't know, what would be the most random, exciting thing? Thoughts, Aaron?
I don't want to see Red Saint Wild in the other universe. Having him in one universe is too much.
Okay, fair. What were you going to say, Sean?
No, I completely support Aaron.
We're in this together.
Yes.
All right. Turning to Chris and Autobio, it was nice to see that, you know, like their friendship really is deep and founded and open, where he actually just, he tells her everything, all of the bad things. For example,
you killed your own self from a parallel dimension?
It was self-defense. He was going to kill me. He found me in his room.
Doing what?
Looking at a picture of me and Amelia Harcourt, like in love.
Back the fuck up.
She's dating Rick Flagg Jr., who's still alive, but really still in love with me.
Rick Flagg Jr. is in love with you?
No, Harcourt.
Wait, okay, this is becoming some fucked up Twilight Zone shit.
Yeah, right.
You ever thought that maybe there ain't another dimension at all?
What?
Like, maybe you walk through that door in there and you're in some sort of world that messes with your mind and gives you whatever it is you wanted, but none of it's real.
No, I'm pretty sure it's real.
So two things. One is that I think it would be fun if there were a reality where he and Rick Flagg were in love instead of him killing him. The other thing is that, yeah, I think that last part is what you were saying, Jean, about Autobio kind of like being in denial about her own interest in this. What's about this other universe where everything's good?
Right. It's just something there. There's just something there. I think it would be super interesting if she's the one that goes through to try to live this other life that we're thinking Chris is going to do. What if it's Autobio? Mm. That goes through and it's like,
I'm worried about her over there, though.
I am too. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, what the, you know? I am too. But I think that would be, you know, there'll be a good swerve.
Yeah.
To save her instead of her having to save him.
Yeah. It is interesting, you know, the way he's selling it to her. I'm cringing the way he's selling it to her in particular. You know, he says, it's a land of goodness and light, and this is the dark dimension. But he should know that it's not all it's cracked out to be, because...
It's like me, except more of a dick with the worst taste in clothes.
I find that hard to believe.
Look what I'm wearing. Looks like a Saudi prince vomited his fucking dining room all over me.
You're wearing his clothes?
You think I bought this ads? It's fucking hateful.
Fucking hateful.
This episode. And
Let me shout out John Cena real quickly again, because he's just absolutely killing this role.
Mm-hmm. The comedic timing too. Yeah. In addition to all the nuanced emotional stuff. Yeah.
So good.
I was gonna say almost the exact same thing. John Cena, his acting in this episode, it just exemplifies why Gunn chose him for this role. The way that he's able, when he's talking about his brother and his father in this alternate universe, you can hear the pain in his voice.
Yeah.
Just 10 out of 10 performance for this guy, this episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like that we've seen the arc of his, not just his character, but his relationships with everyone else, and that they do remember to do these subtle, or I guess I should credit James Gunn with this, remember to do these subtle callbacks to previous things. Like in this case, he seems to know this big boom is coming once they set up the new QUC door. And he warns Leota to run, because in the first season, he did not warn her to run before the big boom went off. He's like, you need to be told to run. So this time he sent her out first. And I don't know. Yeah, just seeing with every single character, how he is a better friend to them now. I think shows also that he hates himself less.
Mm.
But Augie's neighbors must have hated when they set it up in their house with that big boom. Like, did it take out the whole neighborhood?
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
How do you explain that?
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
I don't know. The racist guy down the street is playing with firecrackers again.
Yeah, we're not going to bother him, you know?
Maybe that's why his next door neighbor hated him so much.
Maybe.
All right. This is a good spot for another quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about some career opportunities for the women in this show. So Rick Flagg Sr. visits Harcourt to guilt trip her about her relationship with his son before his death. He tells her that Waller blacklisted her from all government agencies out of pettiness, since she couldn't blame her own daughter for exposing her in season one. And Rick offers Harcourt, now desperate for work and income, a way back. She must help him trap Peacemaker so he can take out his revenge for his son's death. Meanwhile, Adebayo thinks she's making career moves with a new ad in Pro Soldier magazine until Chris tells her the whole publication is a scam that nobody reads. She has wasted her limited funds. So, Okay, one question. Where do we think Waller is gone to? She's apparently gone, but people are still listening to her orders. Where is she and what the whole thing that's going on with her daughter? She just fell off the map. I don't trust that.
I thought she was arrested.
I don't think so.
Did she escape? Did she?
I never heard them say they arrested her, did they? They just knocked her out at one point. In Suicide Squad. The Suicide Squad.
I think that Amanda Waller, wherever she is, whether it's in prison, kicked out of the government, maybe some posting that she's not quite happy with, she has so many favors that she can call in. She has so much pull with the position that she held in the government for all of those years. So that kind of power doesn't leave overnight.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fact.
I just wonder if she is working on some secret project that's more dangerous than what she was doing before.
She's always working on a secret project that's more dangerous than what she did before. That's Amanda Waller in a nutshell. Yes. Absolutely.
She and like Lex Luthor teaming up in Belrive to fight back or something.
I don't know about Lex, you know, because from what I've heard, what James Gunn has said, it might not be a Lex and Amanda team up. It might be a Lex and someone else's team up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who, Brainiac?
No.
Oh.
It might be a Lex and Soup team up.
Oh, it's a fight. Yeah. Okay.
Remember what Soups told them? I wish you would just listen. We could help together. Mm-hmm. That's what he told them at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I believe, of course, Clark or Superman, Kal-El, whatever we call him, would give him a chance. Of course, he'll keep giving him chances. Because empathy is punk rock, okay?
But yeah, I think Waller is pulling strings somewhere, whether like Aaron said, it's in jail or another, you know, position in the government somewhere else, another, you know, top secret facility. She's somewhere, you know, making moves behind the scenes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Like a real villain should.
Mm-hmm. Rick Flagg's making moves right in front of the scene, at the top of the scene.
Not like a villain, you know, like a villain.
I mean, he's obviously an antagonist, but
not a villain.
He's feeling villainous to me. Like, I did not find him a villain in Creature Commando, but I do he feels villainous to me in both Superman and this season.
No.
What do you think, Aaron?
It's tough. I want to put him into the category of a villain, but I think he's just got his blinders on. He's so hyper-focused on this guy that he wants to blame for the death of his son because he can't punish Waller. It's just not within his set of power and authority in the world to punish Waller for what happened. So he has to find someone else that he can blame. And I can't really hold that against him. I'm not a parent, so I can't relate to the pain of losing a child, but I can't say that I would be acting any differently in that scenario.
Mm. Mm. It's interesting also, Rick mentions that it's Waller's fault that his back was broken, which is a reference to Creature Commando season one when Clayface breaks his back.
Yeah.
So that actually gives him a common experience with Amelia, where she also was so broken by a mission that she had to relearn how to walk. You know, she says, "It almost killed me."
Yeah, go ahead.
No.
No, I was saying that he also said when Hawkeye was like, Chris was just following orders, when he said that, you know, I got some orders in the Creature Commander show. I forgot what was the island called?
Pokolistan. It was a Central European country.
Yeah, and he said he didn't do what he was ordered to do, just like, you know, Hawkeye didn't do what she was ordered to do in Quantum Maltese. And I think that's why he's holding Peacemaker to such a... That's why he has such blinders on for Peacemaker. Because it's like, Chris could have opted... He's seen Chris could have opted not to do what he was told to do by Waller. Just like I did, just like you did. But yeah, he still did that thing.
Yeah.
But Chris is... not him, and he's not Harcourt. And we're seeing why he opted to do that thing in the series.
Yeah.
Right? We're seeing the reasons why he's seeking, you know, approval from someone like Waller.
Hmm. Right? Yeah.
This is how he's been brought up his entire life, to seek approval from horrible people.
Like Waller's a stand-in for his father, in
absolutely.
A way.
Absolutely.
I still wonder, why doesn't Rick blame Waller more for this? And also, just want to point out, you know, Rick's like, I defied her orders when it was wrong. But actually, he defied her orders in Creature Commandos because he was dickmatized by the Princess of Pokolistan.
Yeah, yeah.
And he ultimately, it's vague at the end of the season, but it looks like Amanda was actually right in that case about the princess. That the princess really was an agent of evil, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why do you think he doesn't blame Waller as much as Chris? Like, even though he calls Waller out for blaming Harcourt more than her own daughter.
I think Chris is just the easier target, for sure. I think
he
can convince the U.S. government that Chris is a threat that needs to be taken out, especially now that they're getting all of these anomalies. He's just the easier person to blame. He knows that he can get away with punishing this guy.
Mm.
And I think it's also visceral. Like, this is the person who actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As opposed to the person who commanded him to do it. This is the person that actually did it. So okay. I'm going to focus all my energy, all my attention on the person who actually did it.
Mm.
And if that doesn't satisfy me, maybe then I'll go after the people who actually put him in that position. But first, right. I will have to get this person.
Right. That makes sense. So we know Rick knows that Amelia was close friends with his son, but I don't know if he knew that there was more to their relationship at the end. Mm. He does say, "Do you remember what you told me after the funeral?" And then she kind of like interrupts and we don't find out what that means. What do you think she told him after the funeral?
Mm.
Like about their romantic relationship or...
Hawkeye doesn't seem like the person who would divulge that, though.
No, unless she got drunk with him because, you know, they were grieving.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't see her as, you know, giving that information up. Maybe like, you know, I love them or something like that, but not to the extent that, you know, I wish we had a life together type of situation.
Yeah. Aaron, did you see him clock that 11th Street Kids photo on Harcourt's wall?
I did. I think another thought that I had about the two of them in this scene, going back to the whole idea of refusing an order that you think is unjust. I wonder if that's going to end up biting him in the rear, because he's making this speech to Harcourt, and Harcourt is being forced to do something that she really doesn't want to do and that she doesn't think is right. Mm. So is that kind of rhetoric going to end up forcing Harcourt to turn on Rick Flag?
Right. Yeah, good question. And we see Rick by the end of the episode, he's really watching Economos, which, right, like, about time that somebody notices that this guy's not reliable for this mission. But I think because he clocked that photo in the wall, he's going to be watching Harcourt as well. What do we think she's going to do? Because she's still seeking out bar fights, which I don't know. That's self-destructive behavior that could lead her anyway, any direction. But we see she sold her TV. She says her utilities are about to be shut off. She is quite desperate for a job. Do you think she will go through with this betrayal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I agree. I think she's going to go through with it and retroactively make up for her sins. I don't think it's going to be an 11th hour decision to back out. I think it's going to be, oh no, I really messed up here. I need to do something about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
All right. Sean, do you want to set up the last act of the episode?
Sure. It's a trap. Chris contacts Harcourt. He wants to talk before he decides whether to try to move forward with Earth to Harcourt instead. When Rick Flag Sr. confronts her, she admits she's going to meet him. She tells him where, and she tells him he better bring all the backup if he wants to take in the Peacemaker. At the same time, Red St. Wild performs a fire dance ritual that unlocks supernatural powers, allowing his astral projection to spy on Eagly, following him back to the cabin in the woods. The traps have been set, and Argus is ready to close in on Peacemaker, Eagly, and the rest of the 11th Street Kids next week.
We didn't mention that we do still have actually two of the agents that were attacked by Eagly around: Klein, aka Ponyboy, and Vega, aka Mexicali. Unsurprisingly, Rick calls them by their proper names. And yeah, so they have been set on Economos to watch him. What do you think, Aaron, what do you think that Economos is going to do at this point, where he has no trust and he's basically being babysat, but he knows bad things are about to go down?
I think he's going to keep doing what he's been doing and sabotage in whatever little ways that he can manage. It's going to be a lot more difficult now that he's had his phone taken away. He can't contact anyone in the team that might be alerted to the situation. He's got everyone watching him, like you said. I just keep wondering, why are they taking all these half measures with Economos, like taking his phone instead of looking through his text messages?
Right. I hope he deleted.
I hope so too, but putting eyes on him instead of just removing him from the whole operation, it just, it's not quite making sense to me, other than the fact that they keep saying he's a master hacker and no one can match his skill. There's got to be someone that can match his skill. I don't know. I'm not buying all of these half measures that they're taking with him.
I mean, I guess he's been with Argus for a while. And so there was a certain level of trust inherent. And they're in Evergreen, Washington, which I don't know how remote this is, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm finding reasons, but again, I'm going to wait and see if all is explained, because it really seems like they've been setting him up this whole time to cause problems, or like this was some sort of punishment for him for being part of that whole, you know, what happened last season that took Waller down. I don't know. Sorry, Sean, what did you think? What were you going
to say? No, I started to think that, you know, when he looked at the picture of them all together in Harcourt's apartment, yes, he blames Chris, but he also sees all of them as complicit as well. So to Aaron's point of his blinders, I don't think he's thinking it through. I think he's, you know, like, okay, I'm going to keep this guy close to me until I get this guy that I want. Right. but he's not strategizing in a right frame of mind. And so he is all emotion right now. Like Rick Flagg Sr. is all emotion. There's no real concrete plan of action except to try to use Peacemaker's friends to find Peacemaker and get him. And he doesn't see the inherent, you know, stupidity in that plan. But maybe when he goes and he says, keep eyes on him, it's mm-hmm. after he clocked the picture in her apartment.
Okay, true.
So now it's like maybe he's starting to say, oh, okay. These people were really tight. These people were mm-hmm. really close. You know, he went to feel out Hardcore. He didn't go, you know, he went to see where her mind was at. And now the picture's up there with all of them, and he's starting to, things are starting to turn in his head. That's how I took it. Mm. Whereas before, it wasn't. As before, it was just like, gotta get him.
Right.
Now he's starting to look at all the pieces and maybe put them together a little bit more coherently.
Right. Yeah, because before he was giving orders from his office, and now he's on the ground seeing things in motion.
Right.
And Aaron, what did you, like, so Economos gave Hardcore a look like she was a traitor, which fair. Yeah. Do you think that Hardcore, that's going to affect her or change the way she might behave next?
I don't know if pressure from Economos is going to necessarily change her behavior. Maybe it'll add to the coming avalanche that'll eventually result in her betraying Argus, but right now I think it just drives a wedge between the 11th Street kids that they're no longer a coherent group anymore. They're all on their own paths. Some of them are trying to work towards the same goals, but they haven't really come back together yet. They're certainly separate individuals going after their separate goals.
Yeah. Right. What would be the ideal way for this season to end when it comes to the 11th Street kids?
Wow.
That's a big question.
Like, do we want them to be their own independent team? Do we want them to be working for the government? Do we want them to reform and occupy the other universe?
I want them to end just as dysfunctionally as they did last season.
But with heart and hugs.
Yes.
All right. So just a couple notes from the trailer teaser at the end of the episode. Skip forward a couple times if you don't want to hear that. But obviously, we know it's setting it all up to come to a head with Eagly, with Argus. And it looks like Rick will capture and question Chris, but I'm guessing not for long. We see Adebayo and Vigilante driving a car and it's cut off who's with them. I'm guessing they help break him out. And then we see at some point Chris and Eagly look poised to walk into the QUC together. I don't know if that's from the episode or misleading. I don't know. Thoughts and predictions, Sean?
You know me.
Yeah.
No predictions. But
you were they didn't go into the QUC this episode.
Yeah. I for the rest of the season, I just really want to see how they play this ultimate dimension amongst the 11th Street crew. Right. Because at least two of them, you know, really want that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Economos or Hardcore would want that. Right. So who's going to need saving? That's my question. Ultimate dimension.
Yeah. You don't think Economos or Hardcore would want to go to the alternate dimension?
No.
I mean, I don't know that they're happy in this one.
But they could be.
I mean, Hardcore is trying real hard. And but Economos they could be. Is... Yeah.
Like, they see a path forward.
See, I feel like if those two would be most prone to wanting out personally, but...
Really?
It's also... Because I know that Adebayo, when she looks at the other dimension, she's not going to want to be there.
Yeah, of course.
Hardcore. Yeah. I can't see her killing her other self. I don't know. Maybe. Do you think the two hardcores will fight this season?
I don't know if hardcore number two is a fighter.
No, we haven't seen it, but
they haven't planted that seed in my mind yet.
Mm.
But she does work for Argus. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
She could be. She dated Peacemaker. She's dating Rick Flag Jr. Maybe she is a fighter. Maybe she's just as what we think of the alternate dimension. Maybe she's all gung-ho about that whole shit too.
Yeah, she just wears dresses in between.
Yeah, basically, right? So, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like Hardcore and Economos can see a path forward in their world to where they can be okay in their minds, right?
Hmm.
I don't think Chris and Adebayo can see that right now, personally.
Aaron, who do you think's most likely to want to jump universes?
I would say Hardcore for sure. I think she has made a habit of running from her problems, and what's the most literal way to run from your problems? In terms of Economos, I don't see him wanting another life. I think this is the kind of guy who thrives on familiarity and his routine. So I don't know that he would ever jump ship into a whole different universe where he has to relearn everything.
That's a good point too.
I don't know. I think this might be just Chris's journey being tempted by the alternate dimensions. I think that he's in a very unique space to be attracted to all of this. It's very shiny for him. And I don't know if anyone else is going to be convinced that this alternate universe is the right thing for them.
Mm. I'm worried about Eagly with them going in there together. That's obviously, let's get Eagly away from Red Saint Wild, but what's the reaction going to be when he shows up with an eagle in the other universe?
The jig will be up. They're going to know that's not my Chris. Who are you?
Well, I'm very curious to see what happens in the last four episodes. They drop on HBO Max on Thursday evenings in the US or Fridays elsewhere. You look for our recaps on Sundays or Mondays. And next week's title for episode 5 is Back to the Suture. So I think somebody's getting stitches. Maybe it'll be Economos the Snitches.
That's funny.
Thanks. It's convincing when you say that's funny with no laughter. If you want to hear our previous coverage of all things DCU and some things DCEU, you'll find those links in the show notes. And Marvel fans, we promise we're covering Eyes of Wakanda. We have not forgotten.
It's cursed. I'm telling you, there's a curse on it. I don't know what's happening. I got super sick.
In
the middle of the week, just terrible timing all around. So we're going to try again.
Yeah.
We're going to try again.
We'll keep going until we do it. And then we're going to do Marvel Zombies, which
comes
dropping
out the 24th.
Yeah. Yep. Four episodes dropping on the 24th. The trailer, you were excited about the trailer?
I'm so excited about this. This looks like it's going to be exquisite.
Yeah.
And all the gore that you want from a zombie tale featuring animated characters.
Mm-hmm.
Go crazy, Marvel. Go crazy.
And we get Blade Knight. That looks cool.
Oh, gosh. So cool.
And Aaron, what's going on Radioactive Ramblings?
A lot, actually, coming up. Next week starts Gen V Season 2, so that's real exciting. That episode is going to come out on Wednesday, so expect some coverage from Radioactive Ramblings by the weekend.
Nice.
We're hoping to either have Saturday or Sunday as our dedicated release day, but we're still trying to figure out exactly how that's going to work out with our schedules. After that, stay tuned for some other stuff. It looks like Gen V is going to run right up until about the time that Fallout is going to be starting, or that we can start getting ready for Fallout. At least I think Gen V goes to the end of October, so that only gives us 1 month in between, which is awesome. But yeah, that's about all we have going on Radioactive Ramblings right now. Thank you so much for having me on this week. I really have been loving talking about Peacemaker with you guys.
Yeah, this is
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, it's been fun to have you here. And I have been rewatching Fallout recently.
That was a great series.
7 of the 8 episodes. Yeah.
I really liked it. I thought it was one of the better series from last year, personally.
For sure.
Yeah, completely agree. do also check out the link tree in the show notes for links to the other affiliates in the network. Never Mind the Music, Where Psychology Meets Music, Properly Howard, Film Reviews, We'll Shift Dust, covering Silo, Dune, and other sci-fi, soon Frankenstein, and the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, which is self-explanatory. And a shout out to Aaron for the cover art for this series as well. Thank you, Aaron, for that.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to get a little creative with this.
Yeah, very dope. Very dope.
And John, what else is going on the Lorehounds feed?
So we have Foundation Season 3 coverage with John and Marilyn. Season 3 just finished. Season 4 renewal has been announced. What a great season. Sending in a very strongly worded voicemail to express my pleasure with Foundation for this wrap-up that they're about to do. David is leading weekly coverage of Alien Earth. Again, another great series. We've been very lucky to have all these great shows airing on TV these last few months. Yeah. Then we have the Heat Death episode. That's with David, yes?
Yeah, David interviewed the guys from the Heat Death about Tolkien and Star Wars. And
then you, David, and John did the Emmys prep episode for this week, which I was very happy to hear the love for Abbott Elementary because it's one of my favorite shows. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good show. And yeah, Emmys are airing on Sunday evening. If you have any feedback or thoughts about Peacemaker or about anything else Marvel or DC, you can send that to comicsvs@thelorehounds.com. That link is in the show notes. And of course, there's that link tree I mentioned where you'll also find the link to the Discord where we have a forum with spoiler chats per episode for Peacemaker. Under current shows now, if you're listening later, you'll find it under franchises, under DC. And we just, first of all, want to thank all of you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to help us out, it's a huge help if you share the episode with anyone else who is watching Peacemaker who you think will enjoy our coverage. We also welcome positive ratings and reviews. That's a huge help in helping more people find us. Just thank you in the first place for listening, and we hope to hear you in the next episode as well. If you are able and interested to help us a bit more, Supercast and Patreon subscribers get ad-free access to all of our podcasts and bonus content starting at €5 a month. This also includes special extra episodes for various show content, like there's a new Alien Earth season pass, which you can buy for one-time fee for €10, or you get all these episodes as a monthly subscriber. So for instance, John, you just did a What You Watching about Alien Earth, expressing your love.
Expressing my love for the show, definitely.
And David did a video breakdown predicting what's coming. And also, I loved his interview with Marilyn about Peter Pan, the book, and sort of drawing out the connections, like talking about who is the Captain Hook of this series. They came to an interesting conclusion that I've been thinking about ever since.
I haven't listened yet, so yeah.
Okay, totally. If you're a fan of Alien Earth, which anyone who doesn't know is heavily about Peter Pan, the book this season, that was a very interesting episode. And of course, there's other What You Watch in small episodes and Second Breakfast and Elevensies. It's Musicals Month, and I think the vote just ended, and it was either the producers or a tie between the producers and Rocky Horror that won. So we've got that coming. And now it's time for a little heavy electronic Night Runner. Ooh. Thank you to our Discord server boosters, Aaron Cage, Tiller the Thriller, Doove71, Athena Angelea, Lestu, Nancy M, Ghost of Perdition, Radioactive Richard, and Adrian. And thank you most of all to our highest tier of subscribers, our lore masters, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Adam S, Nancy M, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Matthew M, Sarah M, Andrew B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dali V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Listu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Colley S, Ilmariel, /Tim, Paul K, Bobby C, Jessica H, Red Zippy, the TCS, and always last, Adrian. Does that qualify as music?
I'm taken aback. That was quite something. But I respect it.
For anyone who doesn't know, I don't listen to these music picks before loading them in. I just pick them purely based on name. And sometimes it works and sometimes it's whatever that was. Aaron, what's your genre request for next week's music?
Let's do a little soft rock.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Let's take it down a notch. Yeah. Less industrial. All right. Aaron, any final thoughts?
James Gunn, you continue to be a genius.
And Sean, yeah. Say your thing to Feige.
Yeah, Feige, man. It's a beautiful day in September 2025. Again, recast T'Challa. Damson Idris is T'Challa.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.